The following programming is sponsored by Dr. Joseph Fallon Jr. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
It's time once again to get inside the world of medicine as prominent endocrinologist Dr. Joseph J. Fallon Jr. brings you Inside Medicine. Stay tuned for interviews with eminent medical specialists and receive vital information about your health. Now, here is Dr. Joseph J. Fallon Jr. with another edition of Inside Medicine.
Good morning, Philadelphia and South Jersey. Welcome to Inside Medicine. A fantastic guest is on in the waiting area, Dr. Lance Guberman. You're going to hear a lot about what he thought he was going to do this morning. And he opened up the paper and saw a author, Maria Salovitz, who he had interviewed about 30 years ago. And she was now in the paper. And Dr. Guberman has a little bit of a tie to how he met her and talked to her in the past, which you'll hear about. But Dr. Guberman is a individual who is incredibly adept at handling overweight and obesity patients. He has a fantastic group that he works with and runs. And additionally, we're going to hear some interesting stuff from one of the premier internal medicine specialists in the South Jersey market. So let me ask Lance Guberman. Lance, welcome to Inside Medicine.
Good morning. Thank you.
Just come up a little closer. So tell me what happened this morning. We were discussing last night what we were going to discuss, and lo and behold, the paper today shows a Maya Salovitz, and is a contributing opinion writer who covers addiction and public policy. Can you tell us about your interaction with her 30 years ago?
Well, I actually didn't remember even meeting her about 30 years ago, but about 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Los Angeles, and I was there for a trial, and I was waiting around the hotel lobby. And there was a woman that was waiting for a ride to the airport, and we struck up a conversation. I asked what she did, and she said she was there for a conference on addiction and that she was a journalist. And so we got to talking about addiction because, of course, that's what I do. And she said, "You know what? I think I interviewed you 30 years ago." So, and she's now I see that she has articles in New York Times almost every month. She's written books on addiction medicine, and she's got some interesting perspectives on the whole opioid crisis as it's been going on for the last 30 years or so.
So that I'm glad you ran into this young lady years ago, and it's fantastic. So, but the key here is that you have a fantastic group that helps people with addictions, and it's highly successful. And additionally, you have a sideline of making sure that people's weight doesn't go up and, in fact, go down. And you've helped many, many people over the Delaware Valley. So let me just ask you, when you woke up and read the paper today about Ozempic and Wegovy and making sure that people can lose weight, you said, "I know all about that." Can you just give me a comment on how you kind of like got into this business? Because you've done a great job and your team.
Well, it's interesting because I've noticed that people that are going through the weight loss program reduce their amount of their alcohol intake. And my addiction medicine patients are much more successful when they start addressing their weight loss. And that's what this article is about. It begins by talking about an addiction medicine physician. And it talks about briefly about his journey through addiction, into addiction medicine, and how it started out in a lot of ways with food addiction. And that really kind of made me think, you know, he's a young physician, and he's already going public about his own addiction. And it really corresponded to mine, although I've been around a lot longer. I kind of ended up in addiction medicine through a food addiction too. It started when I was about 15 years old. I weighed 136 pounds. I went out for wrestling, and I got angry at the guy that was wrestling at a lower weight and decided I wanted to go down and beat him and take the varsity spot. But to do that, to get down to his weight, my father, who had a weight problem, and back in those days, they prescribed the amphetamines for weight. So I started taking his amphetamines. And interestingly enough,
it was bad news for that wrestler, wasn't it?
Yeah. I took the guy's spot. I went and wrestled. And the first time I wrestled, since I was so much stronger than this light guy that I was wrestling, even though my weight was down, I did a really good job. And then the next day, it was like everybody in the school knew my name. And I kind of associated, I don't know if it was the weight loss or the drugs or whatever, but I associated it with popularity. And then I found out that with the amphetamines, not only could I get popularity, and I could also study. And I found out you could take amphetamines the night before an exam and pass the next day. So I continued taking amphetamines all through my medical education.
Well, and so let me just try and get that together. So in other words, when you got the amphetamines, that gave you more attentiveness, more ability to focus on what you needed to study, and that resulted in you being one of the best students around. That's what it looks like to me. And you're also one of the best entrepreneurs around, because you make many, many people have productive lives that they would have been cut short of. And your group is just an A-plus player. Now, this article talked about a GLP-1. I think it was a doctor who started with a GLP-1. Can you maybe just give me an update on that?
Well, my amphetamines ended up with a psychosis, and I ended up in treatment for addiction. And then when I got out of treatment for addiction, I aggressively started weightlifting and bodybuilding and just switched my addiction to that sort of thing. So I developed diabetes, and I was initially put on one of the first GLP-1s about 20 years ago called Byetta, and it helped with the diabetes. But it wasn't until they had more longer lasting GLP-1 drugs that cause weight loss that my diabetes improved. And
what you're saying is the diabetes improved because you were able to lose the weight.
Yeah, before I lost the weight, I was on 5 shots of insulin a day. And once the weight was gone, I got off all of the insulin.
And in this particular write-up, the other Dr. Klein, that person lost 40 pounds and also noticed how effective taking a GLP-1 drug could be in turning around a drug problem, which is actually fantastic. But I think what you just heard, is that our guest right now indicates that you need to have a long-acting GLP-1. And I will tell you this, that he's one of the best experts in the pharmacology of GLP-1 drugs around. So just go over that. The key was you needed a longer acting drug to generate the weight loss.
Yes, the Byetta only gave like about a 5% weight loss. But as they came out with the newer ones, liraglutide, semaglutide, tirzepatide, and now their next one's going to be retatrutide, they've gotten longer duration. So it went from twice a day to once a day to once a week. And every time they got the longer duration, they got greater weight loss. So it went from 5% with the Byetta to now the newest one, retatrutide, that'll be out in a year or so, gives you at least about 30% weight loss, maybe even more.
That's a lot of weight loss, and we're going to get to retatrutide. So I'm just curious. So this particular guy basically just lost so much weight and did so well. Now he got into the business, I think. Didn't that happen?
He ended up in addiction medicine also, the same way that I kind of ended up once I got out of rehab and I saw all these people around. I started treating alcoholism, and then the opioid crisis hit. So I started treating opiate addicts, and I got very busy doing treating addiction medicine. I got so busy that way back in 95, I sold my primary care medical practice, internal medicine, to a hospital, and then limited my practice to just addiction medicine, which I've been doing, since then. And after the opioid crisis started attracting a lot more doctors and a lot more money for treatment, these these drugs start, these GLP-1 drugs became available in with longer duration and more weight loss. So I started turning my attention to food addiction, which is what I felt was my underlying addiction. It was the food addiction that led me to the amphetamines, that led me to the destruction in my life. So the only problem was that patients didn't want to be called food addicts. They didn't want to be called addicts, but they wanted to get the weight off, loss, weight off. So it basically became like a weight loss practice. But as we can see, it is an addiction. Food is an addiction. And one of the biggest problems that we've always had with food addiction is, you know, with opiate addiction, you can just stop. With alcoholism, you tell them you have to stop doing it completely. You have to have complete abstention. Well, you can't completely abstain from food.
Correct.
So, but this drug is different. These drugs are different. When I was using amphetamines, I always thought if they could only come up with a clean amphetamine, one that where you could still sleep, one that you could still eat, one that you wouldn't get psychotic, that would be wonderful. But they never came, but they didn't seem to come up with it. When they came out with these drugs, people are able to sleep on them. They're able to
lose weight.
And at the same time,
they get
not ruin their lives with the addiction.
Right.
They don't have to increase the dose. They can get to a goal weight, stay on the same steady dose and go about their lives normally. And as this was happening, I started seeing my wife, for example, who has a glass of wine with dinner almost every night. When she went on it, she could only drink half the glass. And then I had another patient who was on, who had an alcohol problem, and she was on Vivitrol and she was struggling. And she'd come in, she was trying, she was going to meetings, she was getting her Vivitrol, and she was struggling because she would drink again. And she was obese. And when I was started doing the weight loss, she wanted to get some of the weight off. And as soon as she started with the GLP-1, she didn't need the naltrexone injections anymore. And she stopped drinking and was going to meetings, and her life started improving. And I started seeing that these drugs work for things other than just weight loss.
So I have to say this, that Lance, you're 100% right. These drugs have just made such a difference. And it's always interesting to me, because one of the problems is the cost of the drugs, and that a lot of times people lose the weight, they become undiabetic, their blood pressure goes down, even they don't even know it, but their cardiovascular risk are going down. And all of a sudden, you know, they just have to jump off because of the cost of the drug, or some of them because they got approved for obesity. And once you're less than BMI of 30, the insurance guys tend to cut them off. So we just wish there was a more saner way of getting these GLP-1 drugs for the people to get them better, but also to maintain better. So I'm hoping in the future that we won't have such a negative, sorry, you're successful, now you're off. So when you see a lot of patients on GLP-1s, what happens when they get cut off for financial reasons or insurance reasons? You know, how do you deal with them? Because they get incredibly morose, at least in my experience.
Well, first of all, I've got a very good staff that are able to do the prior authorizations and get the approvals and that sort of thing. And they know where the medications are available during the shortages, which pharmacies have them and that sort of thing. So we're able to guide patients all through that morass of changes that are going on. I mean, sometimes medications are available in the morning, by afternoon, they're not available. So we're constantly moving with that.
So you got a hustling staff that makes sure that you know where the drugs are, because a lot of the pharmacies are good in the morning, as you say, but bad at 3 o'clock because everything is gone.
Right. Or they have trouble with their suppliers, or there's just a whole host of things. But I try to emphasize to these people, you know, the drugs are expensive.
They are.
But you can use your food budget because you're not going to be eating as much.
There you go.
And you're going, and in it's our health system is crazy. It's a chronic care system. It takes care of things after you're sick. Whereas this will prevent sickness and save you money in the long run. Especially, you know, the way it now seems, it's going to extend people's lives. So once you, if you extend somebody's life by a year, that's a year's worth of your salary you're going to be saving. So the investment is well worth it. And then the other thing that we're finding is that some people, as if they make the initial investment, get down to their goal weight, which is usually what their high school weight was, get down to their goal weight, then they can start cutting back on the medication. We still suggest that they try to stay on it every week the way it's prescribed, but if they can't afford it, they can stretch it out. And they can tell, it depends on what their dose is and how long they've been on it, to determine how much they can stretch it out, whether it's every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, that sort of thing. Some people are every 4 or 5. While we still push for every week, we have to deal with the realities of people's financial situations.
There's no doubt about it. Like, I know in my office, I had a long-term patient about 40 years. She basically was told by her company that right now that she's not really going to be able to get that medication and that we're going to basically put it $160 for you to come in and see Dr. Fallon. Ridiculous. But the answer is that the medications are phenomenal. Like you say, you're one of the experts in the area on GLP-1s. So can you just give a little bit of a rundown on how the GLP-1 drugs line up? So you talked about Byetta, but then we're also on the newer ones coming out that have been incredibly beneficial. So what's your favorite and what ones do you try and stay away from for efficacy reasons?
Well, we're pretty much down quite far down the line. Trulicity is still covered by a few insurance companies. Semaglutide was the first one that was available as Wegovy for weight loss, and tirzepatide as Zepbound is available for weight loss. These drugs have improved the Byetta, the Trulicity, the semaglutide, were what we called monoagonists. And what they worked by slowing the passage of food through the stomach so people felt fuller sooner. Of course, that's where the side effects come in. If they don't listen to their body in terms of not eating when they're not hungry, their stomach will expand and that'll send a signal to the brain. And the brain will say, well, we got to empty the stomach. And that's where the nausea comes in and that can proceed to vomiting. But if they, as the dose wears off at the end of just before the next dose, if they take that last day and eat less, they don't have that blown up stomach. When they get their dose, they got to eat less on that day and the stomach won't blow up and their symptoms do disappear. The symptoms always disappear after they've reached what's called steady state. Now, steady state usually takes about 5 weeks because it takes 5 half-lives, and a lot of these drugs are 1 week drugs. 5 half-lives to get a drug completely out of your body, or in this case, 5 weeks to get it completely out of your body, or 5 weeks to get steady state where the amount going in equals the amount coming out. So they don't have these peaks and spikes of the drug going up and down.
Lance, let me ask you this. So one of the problems with these medications are you kind of have to start slow. You can't just go to the maximal dose. So how do you titrate up? Because the people want to get, I want it better now, but you can't give them the higher doses that they're going to be incredibly successful on. How do you have to go back and forth and negotiate with the patients? Do you have any of those kind of problems?
Well, the recommendations by the pharmaceutical companies are usually to stay on a dose for 4 weeks. I usually find that's not necessary. I increase the dose every week. And then if they have symptoms, of course, I can treat the symptoms. We can always stop the nausea with something like Zofran or Compazine, more fiber for diarrhea, constipation, that sort of thing. We can always stop the symptoms. And if they do get symptoms, we explore what they ate, how much they ate, when they ate, that might have caused the symptoms to begin with. Now, if they were following all the directions and they still got nauseous, well, then we stay at the same dose for an extra week or so. But other than that, from my reading of the studies, you get the most weight loss with the highest dose available of the drug. So I push to get there as soon as possible and to stay there, because every time you're increasing, you're causing these peaks and valleys, and that's what leads to the symptoms.
Well, I think you're actually one of the best GLP-1 titrators around, and your group is well-trained, of course, because you're leading the pack. And I think you also have a few good people helping you out. But the answer is that you try and make sure you get them up. Now, does anybody ever get constipation? How do you deal with constipation if these people stop eating that much? And does constipation throw off your titration program?
Not usually. I don't. When people get constipated, they treat it. We treat it with first fiber, and there's all different forms of fiber. There's gummy bears, and then there's Benefiber, which has no taste, and then there's Metamucil. There's cookies. There's all kinds of methods of taking fiber. Usually the problem is patients don't take enough of it, and they'll read the directions on it. They don't realize they could take more.
Correct.
After the fiber, we would go to something like a stool softener, like Colace or that sort of thing. After that, then we go to the laxatives, and usually the magnesium-based laxatives, Miralax and those sort
of
things.
Milk
and magnesia. They can go slow. They can titrate it. Then after that, they go to we go to the oils. You have mineral oil, and if that doesn't work, the one thing that's always going to work is castor oil, because castor oil is pretty severe. They used to give castor oil to stimulate the uterine contractions for deliveries, and that because it works on the smooth muscle of the uterus. It also works on the smooth muscle of the colon, so that's going to get it out of there. But we try not to get that far out to begin with. And then, of course, the next line would be an enema, Fleet's enema, that sort of thing. But I try to emphasize to patients that, you know, don't put up with it. If you're constipated 24, 48 hours, do something now. Don't let it get that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if they push it and they get diarrhea, then you go with Imodium to stop it, mm-hmm. or Lamotil. And we tell them, you know, you can take Lamotil every 4 hours, or really we just tell them, if you have two loose stools in a row, take a Lamotil. You can take it up to every 4 hours, but really they usually don't take more than one or two a day is all they really need to stop things up.
Gotcha.
And then they get the feel for how much they need of the laxative or the fiber or whatever it is, as opposed to the anti-diarrheal medication.
So I agree with you. I think your idea is fantastic. And I do note that, at least in my practice, that if you get constipated, the patients will tend to drop off the GLP-1. So the answer isn't to get constipated. It's to treat the constipation. Then you're going to proceed with your weight loss. I know the Duke Weight Loss Center always indicates if you get constipated, you ain't going to lose any weight. So you want to become an expert on, you just heard Lance talk about how to make sure that you don't get constipated, so you can maintain the efficacy of the GLP-1s and that you can keep moving forward to get a maximal dose so that you lose that weight quicker and better. So Lance, and anything else new in the GLP marketplace? Because you've stressed the idea that you want to have a drug that lasts a long time so that the efficacy is enhanced.
Well, first, what I described with the stomach and the signals to the brain is what's called a monoagonist. And that one included exenatide and liraglutide and Trulicity. They have generic names and the brand names, and up to semaglutide. And then with tirzepatide, which came out as for weight loss as Zepbound or Mounjaro for diabetes, that's called a dual agonist. And that does everything that the monoagonist does with respect to the stomach and the brain, that sort of thing. But it also causes a more secretion of glucagon. Now, normally when we eat, our pancreas secretes insulin, and insulin drives nutrients into the cell, and the excess is stored in the fat cells as sugars. When we're not eating, our pancreas secretes glucagon, which reverses that process and mobilizes those sugars and gives it to your cells for energy. So it depletes the amount of fat in the fat cells. And with the dual agonists, that's where they act mostly through this glucagon effect. And therefore, they cause more weight loss because they're not only stopping you from eating because of what's going on in your brain or what's going on in your stomach, but you're decreasing the amount of fat in your fat cells by the glucagon effect. And that, and you're shrinking the fat cells.
So out of curiosity's sake, I've never heard this concept. So fantastic. So what the glucagon effect is, that does that come at a certain time, or is the minute the shot is administered, does it come right away with the shot? Per se, if it's a 1 week shot, Is that glucagon effect, does that work? Did that work on day one?
I think it works as soon as you take the medication.
Okay, so the answer is
yes. Subcutaneous medication starts working in 20 minutes.
Okay, all right.
Now the triagonist that's coming out in about a year is going to have an additional effect. It's going to do all that, but it's also going to cause a increase in energy expenditure. So we use up more of our fat stores in terms of energy expenditure. Some of the early studies with rats showed a 49% decrease in weight loss. And surprisingly, they found a little increase in heart rate and in the rats, particularly at night. So not a dangerous increase in heart rates, the same thing you would get with an amphetamine or phentermine or something like that, but enough to increase your energy expenditure. And I thought, I didn't know whether it was caused by the drugs or the rats were just having great dreams. But when I looked into a little bit more, it has another effect. It has what's called mitochondrial uncoupling. The mitochondria are the energy organelles inside the cell. And that's where they're the energy factories inside the cell. And when you get mitochondrial uncoupling, what's occurring is the transfer of ions from ATP, which is to ADP. Adenosine triphosphate becomes adenosine diphosphate. It releases an ion. That ion is used for one of two things normally, either for more energy or for heat production. If it's used for more energy, then you're going to get weight loss because you're going to be depleting the energy sources in your body. If it's used for heat production, when your temperature goes up, you're using up more energy and you're burning more calories. If you think of somebody with a fever, what happens is when their temperature goes up, they shake, they get the chills, and they're burning up calories like crazy. And what happens with the newer drug, retatrutide, the triagonist, you do get those chills. You do feel colder. You get heat intolerance. And it was interesting because when I started with tirzepatide, one of the things I did was I called the company. I said, these people are complaining they're cold. And they said, well, they're losing all their adipose tissue. They're losing their insulation.
Yeah.
But then with retatrutide, I think what's occurring, it's more than just losing the insulation. They're actually having this mitochondrial uncoupling, and they're changing their basal temperature, and that's what's really doing it. And it even happens with tirzepatide. Now that I've gone back and asked patients, they do have more cold intolerance. Their heat intolerance. They're cold intolerance. They have to be kept warm. They're wearing sweaters. They're wearing coats. And with retatrutide, it's even greater. But we also have some of it with the tirzepatide. So that's another mechanism besides the glucagon effect that you get with tirzepatide.
Well, I got to say this, that there, we'll try and get that publication out. But that was recently published. Where was that? New England Journal of Medicine on retatrutide, and that's retatrutide, which is an agonist. And we look forward to that being on the marketplace. The answer is that things are getting better and more efficacious. And instead of getting a shot twice a day, you're now down to once a day. And we're going to see what happens in the future.
Once a week now.
Yeah, excuse me, once a week. Sorry. Yeah. So we're going to see what's going to happen. So what's the overall clinical response? You know, you're a clinician, so what do the patients say to you? Because I know you discuss issues with your patients when they get treated and lose that weight. What's their response?
Well, they come in excited and they come back thrilled. And I'll tell you, the practice of medicine has never been like this, where all the patients are happy.
All
of them. They're not complaining. They're happy. They're excited. They're fun to talk to. And they're just, if anything, just looking for the next dose or the next medication that's coming along. It's just been a great way to practice medicine. And it's also, you're also changing their lives. I mean, besides the fact that they have to buy new clothes, you have to be careful. You have to take them off of their antihypertensives because as they lose weight,
perfect,
they can get dizzy if you don't start cutting back. You have to cut back on the diabetic medication, your metformin and that sort of thing, because otherwise they can get hypoglycemic, especially with the sulfonylureas. So you got to be able to cut back on that. Now, I suggest, since I treat addiction, I don't treat the metabolic disorders as I would as an internist. I refer them back to their family doctors.
Sure.
But that's been great because the family doctors are thrilled with the positive response they're seeing. They don't have to
look to work as hard.
They don't have to work for another, they don't have to get another drug. They don't have to
to take away a drug.
Right. They just have to learn how to start tapering things off. We're reversing what we used to have in medicine, this acute care medicine where you take care of people after they're already sick. And now we're doing things to prevent them from getting sick. And so patients are coming, they lose the weight. I've had literally patients give away their canes because they don't have the joint pain, cancel joint surgeries at the, you know, with the agreement of the orthopedic surgeons, but they don't need it as much if they're not carrying that kind of weight around. I had one woman that she was a horsewoman. She was in her 70s and she lost 50 pounds. And she came to me and she said she fell in the pasture. And in the past, she never would have been able to get up and would have still be laying there and probably died out there unless somebody found her. She lost another 50 pounds. She was down 100 pounds. And I just had to notice that her horse must have been very happy. And last time I saw her, she was down 120.
120 pounds down?
And thrilled.
Well, I got to say this. In the article that was talking about Conquer Addiction, it was interesting. The author indicated that the patient said, quote, "It just felt like my body knew when to stop eating." So that was kind of a revelation. And all of a sudden, hey, the patient was doing the right thing. She didn't need that extra weight. So she cut the body said, don't eat.
And most people, like I said, go back to their high school weight. When I went out for wrestling when I was 7 years old and raised, I weighed 136 and I lost the 30 pounds with the amphetamines to get down to 106. I wrestled at 106. But I know that my weight in 10th grade was 136 because I went out for wrestling. And now I'm under that now at the age of 73. So I weigh less at 73 than I did at 15.
That's saying something.
And I feel great too. I run 2 miles 3 times a week. I lift weights 3 times a week and walk after I lift weights. And I feel young.
Yeah. And in this article, they also pointed out that there is a significant reduction in alcohol use disorder and that medical visits were noted to decrease substantially in people who had GLP-1 drugs. How does that apply to your patients? Do you see a decrease in alcohol intake?
Yeah, even most of my patients now don't have alcohol problems.
Okay.
But even them, even they stop, they cut back their drinking. I know it's like I said, when my wife was on it, she usually has a glass of wine with dinner. She could only tolerate a half a glass of wine. There's other things you can't tolerate too. I used to drink a lot of coffee during the day. Now I have a half a cup in the morning and maybe another half a cup later in the day, but I can't drink more than a cup. I just don't want it. And it's not that it makes me sick or anything else. I just don't have a desire for it. It's easy. It's just easy to say no. And it's the same thing with the rest of food. There are things you go through periods where there's some things you can't eat. I had a period where I couldn't eat ice cream. It was too creamy for me, or my partner for a year, he couldn't eat meat. So there are things, and it comes back, but it's not a negative thing. You just don't. I mean, it's okay. You're just not really interested. It feels normal. And the patients call it a decrease in food noise.
Food noise.
And
I love
I've had
it.
Two or three patients that have also stopped gambling.
Wow.
That has done that. And then we find that with Vivitrol, with naltrexone also, that we've used it, you know, it originally came out for alcohol addiction and it helps with the cravings there. And then opiate addiction, of course, it blocks opiates completely. But we've also seen that it works for smoking, for gambling, for sexual addiction too.
So the article also, to my happiness, stated another large medical records study with people who had opioid use disorder and type 2 diabetes reported that the risk of hospitalization for overdose was cut by 40 to 70% if patients took semaglutide, i.e. either Ozempic or Wegovy, rather than the older diabetic medications, including other less effective GLP-1 drugs. So obviously, what the doctor is saying is you want to use one of the more later drugs because they basically have more potency. And he did talk about Zepbound, and he did talk about, you know, one of the future drugs coming, the retatrutide, which should have a significant greater impact on weight reduction. So things are getting better, and you just have to make sure you have a doctor who's up to date, like Dr. Lance.
The future of them is, you know, one of the big problems with the GLP-1s is you lose weight, but you lose... And you lose 60% is fat, but 40% is muscle. And that's the big issue today, because you lose muscle. Now, people lose muscle from various things. They lose muscle from cancer, from muscular dystrophy. Just aging causes muscle loss. And that happens because your body produces a substance called myostatin. And the only way we have now of preventing myostatin production is by weight loss, weight training. So I recommend to all my patients that they do weight training to strengthen them, to maintain their muscles by inhibiting the myostatin. But there are myostatin inhibitors that are coming that are being looked at right now. The first one that came out was called bimagrumab. And bimagrumab was a monoclonal antibody. And there are other monoclonal antibodies now being studied, but bimagrumab was first studied by Valence Pharmaceutical Company, and it was submitted to the FDA as a treatment for muscular dystrophy because of the loss of muscle tissue that occurs with muscular dystrophy. It did not get approved for that, but then the company, Valence Pharmaceutical, was bought by Eli Lilly, and Eli Lilly is combining bimagrumab with semaglutide and tirzepatide, and there are ongoing studies there to see if they can prevent the muscle loss that occurs with the decrease in myostatin. Now, I'm sure some people have seen these children on Facebook that look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're all muscle bound, and they say, "Oh, they're putting those patients on. Those little kids are on steroids." They're not on steroids. They don't have the gene to make myostatin. So their muscles hypertrophy naturally, and they get big and they look like little Arnold Schwarzeneggers, because it's really because they don't have myostatin, because they don't have the gene to make it.
Got it.
Now, whether in the future they'll attack that gene, we don't know. But in the meantime, they're attacking it by trying to inhibit the myostatin that is made normally. Now, we all make it. We make it when we're sick, but we also make it as we get older. And some patients are turning to hormonal therapy because bimagrumab is not available. So some of the men and even the women, the women we got to, basically they were already undergoing hormone replacement therapy for perimenopausal issues. And when they get put on testosterone, of course, they don't have as much muscle loss. And men are also trying to get on it. Of course, it's a little more difficult because testosterone is a controlled substance for men. Now, as they get older, of course, or their levels drop, or they have gonadal hypertrophy or other issues, and they can get it. And they've got some nice preparations for testosterone now to increase the amount of muscle tissue. So right now, all we have is exercise with weights and testosterone to help preserve the muscle as you deplete the weight with the GLP-1s that we currently have.
Yeah, so actually that's been an issue. So in Mexico, all the doctors who treat patients with menopause for over 5 years do give DHEA out. And DHEA is like a 25 milligram dose. It's the most potent male hormone that's available over the counter. And I think somebody was cogent in knowing that after 5 years, muscle strength in the females drops off, and that DHEA is one way of trying to get around that. You can take a 25 and then maybe a month later go up to 25 twice a day. But it looks like what you're saying is somebody figured out exactly where the problem is, and hopefully myostatin will be addressed, and that's another plus coming around the corner for 50% of the population.
Yeah, it was interesting the way we got to it is because practices, the OB practices or GYN practices that are specializing in hormone replacement therapy for perimenopausal women gain weight after menopause.
Right.
So they were going to these doctors, and then the doctors started sending them here to us for GLP-1s. So they would continue getting the hormone therapy from the gynecologist or obstetric gynecologist and come to us for the GLP-1s. And it obviates that weight gain that you have, perimenopausal weight gain. It doesn't, unfortunately, help the sometimes hair thinning, which is probably the biggest complaint that we get from women. We try to direct them towards various treatments for the hair loss, but it's not a lot of good stuff out there right now.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to what we can use besides Rogaine and Nutrafol and nutraceuticals like biotin and collagen and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, I can't wait till the bimagrumide gets available. But I will tell you this from an endocrine perspective, a lot of the endocrinologists do use spironolactone. Spironolactone is a competitive inhibitor, a degradation of a male hormone. And that basically can help hair a lot. So that's our go-to, spironolactone twice a day, high dose, 100 milligrams twice a day. But spironolactone has been on the market 50 years. So it's kind of hard to say that there's going to be some unanticipated side effects.
You see good effects with spironolactone?
I do, 100 milligrams twice a day.
Because I've been using homeopathic doses of spironolactone in a compounded capsule with minoxidil.
Okay.
But they're low doses. I never thought about doing high dose spironolactone.
Yeah. So you usually, at least in my practice, it's 100 milligrams twice a day. Spironolactone has been around 50 years. Its side effects are known. Its efficacy is fantastic. So the only problem is everybody wants to get it in one day, get better hair. So it's, you got to tell them you got to wait at least 6 months and 100 milligrams twice a day. So let's see. What else do you get into? Because basically, you've got a number of people, and your company is expanding tremendously. So where do you see weight loss coming? Because what you're saying here, the stuff is incredibly efficacious. Side effect profile is minimal. Do you anticipate that there's going to be further progress in patients taking advantage of GLP-1s? And do you see in any way the increase in volume, decreasing the price of those, or is that out of your realm?
I don't know what they're doing with the prices. I know what the active ingredients cost. They cost next to nothing. I mean, they make these drugs. They're made like insulin is made. They make them. They're not. You know, we used to get insulin from pigs and
now they got these big vats.
Now they got these big vats filled with bacteria. And they feed the bacteria sugar, and the output from the bacteria is basically insulin. Well, it's the same thing with the GLP-1s. They're made the same way. They have vats, but they're filled with yeast. And they use the same yeast that they use to make beer. So if you go into a GLP-1 factory, it smells...
It smells like beer.
Like you're, you know, so it doesn't cost any as much to make as you might think, but they add on all these other costs. It's kind of interesting. I looked up the patent database for the GLP-1s, and a lot of times they'll have like 26 patents on the drug. One patent will be on the drug, and they'll have 6 patents or 20 patents on the pens in order to give the drug. Now, Eli Lilly is going to get around that right now because since there's such a shortage, they're putting out doses in vials so that people can get syringes and inject it, and they'll get around the pens, but they're still limiting the amount of drug they're giving in the vial. They're doing single dose vials so that it keeps the price low.
Well, we got to say this, that they're entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs deserve to get paid. But you just don't want to be get paid too much, right? If you're on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, they're you know, the amount that they're, the profit margins are really tremendous in these drugs. And they're going to save so much money in the long run. You know, if we just treat, this is preventive care.
Right.
You know, we're going to cut down on joint replacements. We're going to cut down on cardiovascular disease,
yeah, less
diabetes, and all this other stuff. And then people are going to live longer. They're going to be more productive for a longer period of time. And not only are they going to live longer, but while they're alive, they're going to be more comfortable. They're going to feel good and be able to continue working.
Absolutely. So Lance, tell me what you think of the future, because we talked about that tirzepatide drug. Any indication how that's going to work in? Is that going to be an injectable too?
Well, the tirzepatide is the Zepbound.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right now, but the next one, the retatrutide, is a weekly injection. They're doing phase two studies now, so this is for safety and efficacy, and it looks good. Or they've done the phase two studies. Now they're doing they're going to do the phase three studies and bring it out probably in a year or so. The animal studies, as I said, gave you 49% weight loss, which is really crazy. The phase two studies, they're looking at 26 to 30% decrease in weight. So every time they get one, you know, it gets better. It lasts longer. This is going to be a weekly drug. The maximum dose is going to be 12 compared to tirzepatide, where the maximum dose is 15. But I think, I don't know if we're going to be able to increase the dose and stretch it out longer either, or if they're going to give doses different formulations so that they last longer.
Sustained action product.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Vivitrol, which is now Trexone, which was a daily drug. I made the pellets that lasted 2 or 3 months, but they now have Naltrexone and Vivitrol, which lasts a month. They have buprenorphine, Suboxone or Subutex, which was a daily drug, is now available in a weekly or monthly injection as Sublocade. So it depends on how they're able to manipulate
the pharmacokinetics
of the drug itself, whether it's the drug or combining it with other things that slow down its absorption. You know, they talk about it being a daily pill, and they have that daily. They have Rybelsus, which is a daily pill, but I think that part. A lot of people are excited that that's going to come, but I don't see where that's going to come, because they're proteins. We've had insulin available since 1923, and we've never been able to come up with a pill. It's always been injectable. I mean, they made the inhalant, but then that caused pulmonary problems. So and insulin is still an injectable because they're proteins that if you take them orally, when they get into the acidic environment in the stomach, they coagulate and they don't work. So I think we're going to stay with the injections, and quite frankly, I don't see what the problem is with the injections. I mean,
the needles are small.
They're easy to do. Now, we have testosterone, which is a very painful injection.
Absolutely.
Injection. We had the gel, which has its own problems. But now they have Xyostead, which is a very easy injection. It's no different than insulin.
Sub-Q shot.
Yeah, it's a simple. But, of course, the price on that is through the roof.
Correct. So, but hopefully things will keep getting better and better. So I'm just curious. Would you say you're very happy you got into medicine, but also you're a lawyer too?
Yeah. Well, when I was doing addiction medicine, of course, when you're treating opiate addicts, by definition they're criminals. So in defending them, I've got into criminal law.
Gotcha.
And because alcoholics have problems with DWI and stuff like that, I was invited to give lectures at the law school on the effects of alcohol on the human body and dealing with DWIs. And I kind of like the environment. And so I decided to enroll. My wife calls it my midlife crisis, and she's happy it wasn't a motorcycle or another woman, but she does feel like she was a widow for three and a half years while I was studying all the time.
I got it.
But the really exciting part about it for me, what really changed my life, is I did it 12 years in recovery with no drugs. And I had always thought that I needed drugs in order to study, in order to pass a test, because that's what happened to me when I was young.
That's how you started out.
But I was 50 when I went to law school. No drugs, no amphetamines, none of that stuff. And I did great without drugs. And so my drug dependency was kind of misplaced back then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you learned from that mistake and look what you've done. You're somebody who's really helped so many people. Your group is incredibly efficacious in getting people to lose weight, get better, to have better lives. So you're an A-plus star of South Jersey and probably the whole Philadelphia marketplace.
And having fun doing it.
That's really good. So the whole deal is right now is it looks to me like things are getting better. The question is, what do you think about access? Because you can prescribe the drug, but if the patient can't get it or the price is too high, you know, what do you think about access? Is GLP-1 access going to get better in the future, or we just can't tell yet?
It's going to have to get better because it's so positive. It's just like they made all that money available for opiate treatment after the 2016 election, and it became such an issue. Right now, the problem is that the drugs are so expensive, the insurance companies can't afford to cover it. My wife was the director of rating for Independence Blue Cross when I met her, and she used to tell me how they used to, they would take a company and they would find out how many people they had, what ages they were, what dependents they had, and they had these actuaries which would take this group from the company and come up with a price for their insurance. Well, if you took all those, took 40% of their employees, which is the amount of obesity there, and 40% of the dependents, and then added on the price of $1,000 a month for each one of those, the price of insurance gets so high that no company could afford to give it to their employees.
Right.
So the price has to come down from either the original spot with the pharmaceutical company, or the government has to supplement it in some way, or force the coverage the way they've done with addiction. When I was doing addiction treatment in the beginning, there wasn't any addiction treatment available. People are routinely turned down. Now, with all the money that they've gotten from Purdue Pharma suits and the government money, there's IOPs, intensive outpatient treatment programs for opiate addiction everywhere. And also there's new medications that are coming out to treat them, like Suboxone and Sublocade and Vivitrol and that sort of thing. So there's going to be a change. When it's going to happen, what's going to cause it to happen? You know, with the opiate addiction, it needed 100,000 young people dying every year for the government to take action. I don't know what's going to happen with the obesity issue, but we have more obese people than we have drug addicts. So there's a lot of votes there.
There's a lot of votes. I love that line. Well, my impression is that the GLP-1s have just been manna from heaven as an endocrinologist, because when you can get people to lose weight, they just have a different outlook. They're positive. You know, do you have anybody whose RX is due that they don't show up for their GLP-1 drug? They all want to get it. And that's basically because they get a positive response. So that's one of the best drugs at talking about a positive response. And my impression is that the patients are incredibly happy, and you're an individual who makes sure that people who are overweight get treated. So, you know, your company's fantastic. That's all there is to it.
I never know why people are not showing up. They probably could get their prescription from their family doctor or that sort of thing. A lot of the patients stay with us because they like the fact that we monitor them so closely. There's a lot of positive reinforcement. We have really good staff that help them get through problems with their drugs, whether it's constipation, nausea, vomiting, constipation, diarrhea, that sort of thing. So we help them through that. They also like the positive reinforcement of how much weight has come down. And then after they get it down and start spreading it out, they like to come back because relationships with the people.
Remember, people come back because they're happy with what service you're providing. And if there's one person who knows more about GLP-1s, I don't know them around here. You're just basically a fantastic GLP-1 guy. You're always a step ahead, just like you're talking about the retatrutide. Who knows about that? You're a student of medicine. That's all I can say, and one of the best. So how about if you tell people where your organization is, or you've got so many patients you don't care?
we're trying to accommodate all the patients we have. My office has been in Merchantville for 40 years throughout the primary care practice, the addiction practice, and now the weight loss. And but we just opened it. We had a lot of patients that were driving up from the shore, and it became difficult. So we opened an office down in Northfield. Now we're going to, we have a lot of patients from Williamstown, and the traffic's bad on 42. So we're going to open an office in Williamstown and then probably go over to the someplace in Philadelphia just to make, just to, for the convenience of the patients. And to be honest, we're very busy in Merchantville, and we don't like to keep people waiting. And with these drugs, people like to come in and get out. You know, once they're on it, once they're going through, once they understand the protocols that we're doing, they don't want to waste a large part of their day sitting around waiting for us, unless they're having a problem.
Lance, we're at the end of the line. Can you tell us how to get in touch with your office if people would like to?
Our office number is 856-663-4447. And we're in Merchantville, New Jersey.
Thanks, Lance Scooperman, for coming on the show. A fantastic one. I'm sure people want to hear it. The podcast will be up after this show in about 30 minutes. Thank you very much. Joe Fallon signing off. See you guys next week for Inside Medicine.